Oh, dear me, that's all going badly
She's got horribly lost in Paris.
For Lady Hawk, that's a shame, isn't it?
She's forgotten to bring her map, her guidebook. She lost her boyfriend.
She needs the rough guide to Paris.
She does.
But she's forgotten to bring it. She's upset because she's found out the exchange rate is very bad. She doesn't have nearly as much money as she thought she might have.
Paris is screaming in the night, she says.
Yeah.
Maybe that's her baby.
Uh-huh.
Paris.
Right.
Won't sleep through the night. Just a guess.
I think that's almost certainly right. Hello, this is Adam Buxton.
Hey, I'm Joe Cornish.
And this is Adam and Joe here with you on BBC Six Music. We're here until midday today. This is the live show. You're listening to the live show. This is actually happening, right, in your life. This is not the podcast. This is not pre-recorded. Obviously, if this bit is included in the podcast or you're doing Listen Again, then everything I've just said is meaningless. But right now, Saturday morning, this is actually happening. And it's going to be an amazingly exciting show.
It is. We're going to have some exciting Stephen updates. There have been all sorts of events in the Stephen sphere this week.
Stephen has just gone insane.
It's gone crazy.
I got a couple of Stephens in public this week, yeah.
We're going to be filling you in about all of that. What else have we got?
Juvenilia.
Yet more juvenilia.
We have had a flood of responses from people sending in clips of themselves recording bits of audio when they were very little. Some people doing radio shows, the same way that Joe did last week. We played a clip of Joe pretending to be a DJ that he'd invented called John Scott. Mm. And there was also a clip of myself doing a kind of lame breakfast show as a seven-year-old. And we've had loads of clips from people doing similar things. And also just some very funny stroke disturbing rambles from 4- and 5-year-olds that we're going to be playing later on in the program. I stopped saying that sentence because I thought you were going to leap in there, Joe.
No leaping. We're also trying to think of a good Text the Nation. We've got various ideas circling. Some of them are a little bit lame.
Yeah, well,
hopefully one of them will touch down.
You know what? One thing we discussed was even doing like a part two from last week's public pretending Text the Nation.
Because we had so many good follow-ups in, didn't we?
But I think what we're going to do is include the pick of those good follow-ups in retro Text the Nation in the podcast. Mm. It's getting very complicated, our world now, isn't it?
There's so much business.
So much business to get through. Also, of course, we'll just be talking about random nonsense and playing all kinds of amazing music, including free choices, wonderful free choices. We brought some vinyl in this week.
Yeah, I've got some vinyl as promised.
Yeah, I'm going to play some vinyl as well later on. Real records from the actual acetate.
You know, the thing about vinyl is when you look at the sleeves, they're almost frightening because they're so huge and colourful.
Yeah.
They're almost overpowering.
Look at Edwin Collins on the front of, what's that EP there?
This is Orange Juice, or as they were called, The Orange Juice.
And it's like a film still on the front there. And Collins, aged, what, 19, maybe 20, something like that. He looks otherworldly with his long face.
That would frighten a contemporary kid, don't you think?
Definitely.
They wouldn't be contemporary kids can't handle an image of that size.
They would think it was real. They would think Collins was actually stood right in front of them.
They'd think it was a space-time portal.
Right.
Like in the Time Bandits.
Yes, exactly.
They'd want to jump in and tweak his oranges.
Oh, exactly, his navel. Okay, right now, here's some music for you. This is Private Life by
Who? This is Private Life by 100 to Hell.
That's not supportive. What if someone suggested...
Fun. It's just fun. It's lighthearted fun. It's banter. Come on.
Is it? I'll read out an email later on from someone who suggested that I might actually have dyslexia. And if that turned out to be the case, then you would be a dyslexia bully.
Yes. Finally, my life's goal achieved.
Genuine laugh.
This is Grace Jones. I'm going to introduce the record
The
now.
Morning's first genuine laugh from Cornish.
Callings.
Oh, just play the music.
That's Grace Jones with Private Life, taken from her fourth album, Warm Leatherette, released in 1980. What a year. This is Adam and Joe on BBC Six Music. Now, last week and in previous weeks, my co-host Adam has had some trouble reading.
Yeah, a little bit.
Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
Reading some emails. I mean you do very well when you get into the body of the things, but sometimes it's the in and outs that... Yeah. And it is tricky. It's a tricky skill.
What do you do when you're reading them through, like, off the computer screen? Do you go out into the loo and practice there?
I do, yeah. I've been trained.
Right.
Heavily trained.
Heavily trained.
Mm.
And do you read, like, in your own life?
Yes, I do. Yes.
So you're used to reading.
Yeah, I'm a highly skilled reader of words.
Okay, got you. Here's an email that I got right that I'll try and read out. Actually, it was quite a long email, but I'm ignoring most of it. And just going to the end bit, this is from a lady from Taiwan. That's in the Republic of China, Joe. Did you know that? And she lives in room 220.
Don't say her address.
In the Institute of Plant and Microbiology.
You're not supposed to say her address.
It's all right.
She lives in there.
This is her office, obviously.
All right.
Anyway, she's called Paula. Hi, Paula. How are you doing? And she says, do you think that you have dyslexia, Adam? As you seem to have some of the classic signs. Maybe you're just borderline, she puts.
She's dyslexic.
Well, exactly. I'm not really going to get too upset about a diagnosis of dyslexia from someone who can't even write borderline. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But what if she's right?
Well, what if she is right? What's the test? How do you test for it?
Well, it's complicated, isn't it? I mean, that's a proper condition, dyslexia.
Yeah. Maybe we should get a doctor in.
But if I start getting tested for dyslexia, who knows what else they're going to find?
Well, it's you
too
could
late.
Just limit there.
Don't you
remit.
Think it's just too late for me.
It's never too late, man. If you're
really
seriously ill, then you should get something done about it.
Dyslexia is not a serious illness. It is serious if you're suffering.
Yeah, but it's
from
affecting
that
the show. It's bringing the show down.
Right.
I think the BBC should pay for it.
Well, I agree with you.
Or you agree?
Or you agree with
me. Yeah. You've got West Countryitis, is what you've got.
You're the cause of my dyslexia, because I don't have it anywhere else in my life.
Look, I think you should try and read most of the emails today. How about that?
All right, I will try.
You be in charge.
But listen,
of the email
if it does
reading.
Turn out that I do have dyslexia, which is a serious condition, then you could get fired for bullying.
Yes.
Do you realise that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, that could be a massive storm of controversy.
It could be just what we
controversy.
Need.
Controversy, exactly.
To push us into the public eye.
Right, well, so we need to get hold of a doctor.
Well, if you know how to test for this condition, and we don't mean in any way to trivialise it, other than in the context of Adam having it, let us know how we could test for it.
Yeah.
The text number is 64046.
Now, here's a free play for you, listeners. And this is from a chap called M. Ward. We played a single of his a few weeks ago, I think, didn't we? He's got a little hairy beard there, and he's got a nice, warm, retro sound. I think I read somewhere that, I don't know if he still does this, but certainly for a while, he only used to record on old analog equipment.
What's his name?
M. Ward.
Ah.
And he refused to use any digital recording devices whatsoever. That was a point of principle
That's
with M.
cool.
Ward.
He's cool.
If he saw any like computers or
Back
Pro
off.
Tools, he would
just calm down.
Start getting very angry and just, you know, go back into his room with his tape recorder and go there and record there instead. Mm. What do you think of that?
I'm scared by it.
He's a hardliner.
Yeah.
Which is strange because when you listen to his music, it's really very mellow.
So is this recorded in that way?
I think it probably is. This
Have
is called Shangri-La. And this is from his new album, which is called Hold Time.
Talking of bullying, which we were just before that lovely record, it was lovely.
That was M. Ward, by the way, with Shangri-La.
So natural and analogy.
Thank goodness.
Thank goodness.
I loathe anything digital. As soon as I can whiff a little bit of one or zero on anything, it gets me furious.
But we were talking about bullying, weren't we?
Yeah. You specifically bullying me.
You. We had an email in from somebody called Dan, referring to a conversation we had last week about the Empire of the Sun, or Empire of the Sun, the exciting band.
Yes.
And we were talking about their imagery and stuff. And Dan says, hello, just listening to your show, heard you talking about Empire of the Sun. I'm friends with the frontman, Luke Steele, and he was far from hassled about his individuality when he was younger. I know the banter between the English and the Aussies always revolves around the English thinking of us as brutish and the Aussies of you as wet rags. Is that true?
That's the national stereotypes, yeah.
And playing up to these stereotypes is all very entertaining. However, I thought Six Music was above the stereotyping and more about the music.
What's his name, this chap?
Dan.
Come on, Dan, grow up! Obviously, you are wrong. We're not above that kind of thing at all. No, you're right. You're right, Dan. We shouldn't pander to lazy stereotypes.
What did we say exactly?
Well, no, all I said was that I was surprised, given how extremely flamboyant and ridiculous looking he is, right? Mm. That he was... I speculated that he must have had a hard time growing up with that level of ludicrous flamboyance in somewhere like Australia.
Right.
Which is generally thought to be... And I did say at the time, I said this is a lazy generalisation, but you could say that comparatively, Australia would be a harder place than most to grow up looking like that.
He was far from hassled about his individuality when he was younger, says Dan.
In fact,
which means he was cock of the walk.
That's right.
Do you think he came into school wearing his...
G'day, Luke. You're looking absolutely ridiculous this morning.
I love it.
I absolutely love it.
Now,
I love
class,
what you've done with your hair this morning, sprayed half of it pink and the other half green.
Usually we discourage pupils from coming in dressed in anything other than school uniform, but the way Luke's dressed this morning, I mean, struth.
Struth, Luke, you've elected not to wear pants this morning.
That stripe across your eyes is terrific.
Yes.
The cockatoos nesting in your armpit hair are provocative.
And you've painted up your buttocks there.
The size of those shoes, the right one's a metre wide, the left one's tiny, absolutely tiny. I don't know how you squeeze your foot in it, mate.
And you appear to have taken a lady's bra and used it as shoes.
And the way you've still got your umbilical cord attached and you've tied a shoebox with glitter on it onto that, that's really pushing it over the edge. Well done, mate.
Well done, mate. In fact, I think the whole class should stand up and salute Luke for the way that he's come into school this morning.
But
he's
Luke,
an example to us all.
In future, don't bring the tiger, mate. It's just mauled Tommy. Tommy.
The tigers are dangerous.
Yeah, not the tiger,
You've
mate.
Gone too far with the tiger.
Yeah, and can you get the spaceships to hover a little higher? They're just grazing the heads of some of the younger pupils.
And also, Luke, you're not a robot from the future, just to tell you. But everything else is great, and good on you.
What a brilliantly accurate depiction of the Australian accent.
What was his name there who sent the email again?
Dan.
There you go. You happy now, Dan?
That'll solve those issues.
I think it's time for a trail, isn't it, Ben? Here we go. Well, Ben, where's the trail?
There you go. That's for any listener who's at sea or is a sailor. Who was that?
Or a pirate.
Captain Pugwash. Was that the... What was that?
That was the Wonder Stuff.
There
yeah.
you go.
That's not new Wonder Stuff, is it? That's old
No,
Wonder
it's from
Stuff.
92.
They haven't reformed. I mean, they've reformed
the
for gigs,
seats.
Haven't they? But I don't know if they're producing new actual music. So listen, Joe, last week, right, on Friday when I came to London before our show, I was cycling down in South London and crossing a busy junction when I saw right in the middle a wallet, a big fat wallet on the road. So I leapt off my bike as soon as there was a lull in the traffic. I had to do it quickly because it was a really busy junction down there near the Oval. And I scooped up the wallet and immediately pulled over onto the side of the road by a pub and had a drink, and I was there for about a
to celebrate the wallet.
No, I didn't have a drink. I just pulled over and I inspected the contents of the wallet. First thing that went through my mind, what do you think the first thing that went through my mind was?
It depends how much cash was in the wallet.
Well, exactly. I was curious to see if there was any cash in the wallet, right? Because it had clearly just fallen out of either a cyclist's bag or, I don't know, maybe someone...
So you mean no one had time to get there before you?
Exactly. I was the first person on the scene.
You think somebody might pick up the wallet, take out the cash and pop it down again?
Yeah, yeah. A yobbo, you know, like or a thief or whatever. Mm. If they'd nicked it, they might have taken the money out and just lobbed the wallet out the window. That's what the thieves do sometimes.
That's true. That's true.
And I checked for cash, and it flashed across my brainium in just a second, right? A split second even, not as long as a second. Like, if there's any cash in here, I might just nick it and then get rid of the wallet, right? I'm admitting that because I believe that most people would entertain that thought for a microsecond and then discard it, as I did almost immediately. I mean, it came back again a couple of times, but I got rid of it each time. Mm. Actually, it was moot because there was no money in the wallet. So what I then did...
What about card fraud?
Well, exactly. I can't help noticing that sometimes, despite the world of chip and pin and super security, sometimes you go into a shop, there's absolutely no chipping and pinning.
It's the telephone ordering, though,
right,
isn't it?
Exactly.
You can buy anything on the telephone with a card, right? All they do is flip it over and ask you for the security code on the back.
That's right.
What kind of security is that?
It's a joke.
You can go telephone shopping mad.
You can go telephone shopping mad for about...
catalogue shopping.
At least a day, I would say, before the bank get wise. Is this irresponsible?
Yes, but we're talking hypothetically. Were you a criminal or somebody with no morals?
Right.
That's what you would do. And I'm talking from the perspective of a victim.
Yeah.
I'm saying that were someone to steal my wallet.
Yes, you see, I'm talking from the perspective
of
a perpetrator.
Yeah.
Thinking, ooh. No. Well, instead what I did was I
what
went
sort of
through...
What sort of a criminal is that who thinks, oh.
Ooh.
Little bit of fraud. Oh,
it's not very Tarantino-esque.
That's what they really like, though.
Is
Tarantino
it?
Fails to grasp.
Oh,
little
what?
Doggy.
Oh,
you go to bark. Where you go to bark?
Woof.
You're barking.
Woof.
Woof. Woof.
Cut your ear off. That's a good idea.
I have to cut your nails off.
Might have to cut your hair.
Do your nail.
What kind of grotesque caricature is this now? Anyway, yeah. Listen. What I did with the wallet was I went through the contents, right?
Mm.
And I got the guys, you know, trying to find some phone number or other. So I found his gym membership card, or what I assumed was like, it was a card from some gym, and I phoned up the gym.
It's probably a gym membership card.
You reckon?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I phoned up the gym, and I said the name of the guy of the wallet that I had found.
Wow, the dyslexia is really kicking in.
Do you know what? I was pausing because I was anticipating the end of this story, and I was anticipating
the
scorn bucket that was going to come from Corn Bucket. Corn Bucket.
No, I'm enjoying it. It's an exciting story.
Yeah, well, just don't talk about dyslexia in the middle of the exciting story then. I mean, you've derailed my printer story on a number of occasions.
I know, someone emailed in about that,
yeah.
Didn't they?
Don't you dare derail
finish this one. Finish this one. Come on, push.
I'm worried now because it doesn't
just
have a proper ending.
Well, the words were going to continue, weren't they?
So what I did was I phoned up the guy, the yeah. gym, right?
Yeah.
And spoke to quite a clueless sounding guy there. Can you bring the wallet in? Oh, can you drop it off? No, because I'm in South London and your gym is in Norwood. Yeah. Why are you calling? Well, because I was hoping you could get in touch with this member and then tell him that I found his wallet and give him a call, thinking that they would have his detail. Oh, so you want me... So I would call him and you would drop off the wallet? So, no, it took a while to establish what I wanted, but eventually the guy said
he was dyslexic too.
you're going to be in trouble, man.
I am going to be in trouble.
And sure enough, it worked, though. The guy sorted it out. And a few minutes later, I got a call from this chap. He said, oh, you found my wallet. I'm so grateful. Thank you. He cycled round to my house. He wasn't too far in South London. And I got such a huge amount of pleasure from, like, not making a big deal out of it, right? Mm. I just handed it over. Just opened the door. Yeah, hi. Yeah, I'm the wallet finding guy. Haven't stolen anything from your wallet. Might like to have a look. Absolutely nothing missing. I'm just going to hand it over. I'm not going to make.
Little did he know you'd replace the entire contents with duplicates.
Yeah, little plastic cards that I just scrawled on. Just handed it over. It was a wonderful feeling. I felt
what a fantastic feeling.
I felt like Jesus. It was wonderful, you know? And I really made a meal out of not making a meal out of it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
In my own head.
Yeah.
I was like a saint.
That's a good story, man. We should talk further, but we got to go to the news.
Stop. What? Shut up. The music's still playing. That's Milk. Milk with Love, Get Out of My Way. Is that Milk with Sean Penn?
No.
No,
they've got an E on the end, as you say. That was a record that went out to all dogs or anyone who likes ultrasonic whistles. And it's got a very sexy cover. Ben, our producer's put a little capture of it there. Can you see that, Adam, on page 3 of your list? It's got a couple of gender ambiguous people.
Well, men they're called.
Well, one of them could be a lady.
Oh, I see, yeah.
It's a bit like that. Was it Pulp who did a similar... Oh, no, it was... Well, who was the band that did the similar androgynous kiss in
Placebo?
The 90s? Maybe it was Placebo, was it?
I can't remember.
No, it was... What's his
name? I mean, it's an old thing. Everyone does it, the androgynous kiss.
But this time there's a bit of tongue.
Right.
That's what, or is that a lip? No one, I can't quite tell what's going on. But
it might be a sweet.
It's provocative and sexy.
Is it one of those sweet shrimpy sweets?
What, like a powdered shrimpy shrimp? Thing?
Yeah,
like a marshmallow shrimp.
What they call those shrimps? Are they just called shrimps?
Yeah, they're called shrimps. Yeah. No, it isn't. I'm pretty sure it wouldn't be.
I think that would make it less cool.
Yeah,
two androgynous people passing a shrimp.
No, I think it'd make it more cool.
Anyway, that was Milke. Were you happy about Sean Penn winning for Milke?
I was, yes, but I thought this was at the Oscars, obviously,
yeah.
Which I didn't watch. I only watched the highlights, but did you watch it?
You know what? I can't figure out how to get my Skybox to stop switching itself off automatically.
Really? You've got the sleep button
or
something. Yeah,
so I only taped an hour of it and then it switched off, or rather I only taped an hour of Fern Cotton's. I had to stop myself doing some swearing in the middle of saying her name there. Coverage of the red carpet
right.
stuff. Why does she have to cover everything, Fern Cotton?
Because she's very peppy.
I know, but is there no one else? I mean, she's wonderful and talented and beautiful, but there must be other people.
Like you.
Like me.
And me. On the red carpet.
But no, so I didn't really see. All I heard was stuff and on the radio thereafter. Bits of speeches, Kate Winslet's so-called restrained speech.
Well, that's the thing, seeing as you ask, what's his face? Sean Penn, he did a very self-aggrandizing speech.
Self-effacing, surely.
It was, but it was in this sort of weird cosmic language, as if it was a bit of Marlon Brando dialogue from Superman 1.
Uh-huh.
Mickey Rourke has risen again. Phrases like that, you know, as if this is an event that gods hold
for mortals.
Whereas all the British speeches were very self-effacing. Yeah. It was Danny Boyle jumping up and down like Tigger, and Winslet talking about shampoo bottles, kind of letting the air out of the whole thing. Whereas Milk was still in old... what's his name?
Penn.
Sean Penn was still in old-school Oscar mode.
I prefer that, though. You know, the whole thing
grandiosity.
Of, the whole thing of Winslet and her shampoo bottle rings totally hollow to me anyway. In a way that it doesn't with Danny Boyle so much. You know,
because it's empty.
Yeah, the shampoo bottle.
Yeah.
She's used it all.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. Not that I begrudge Winslet her wins. She's a wonderful, talented actress. I can't wait to see Revolutionary Road. It's top of my list of must-sees.
Is it?
Yes.
It's been out for weeks.
I love domestic drama. Any
I'd
kind of domestic
I'd want to go and see it, but my lady friend says it's too depressing.
Oh, really? I know. Apparently, it's not a good date movie.
No.
It convinces you that marriage is pointless.
Marriage and children are misery.
Hollow institution, yeah. I know. It's a tough one in that respect. But maybe I'll just go on my own.
Yeah.
But I was glad that Penn won for Milk, because he is very, very brilliant in that film. Even though, as Rupert Everett says, isn't it weird that only a straight man can play, like, one of the most famous gay men in history and get a big prize for it?
Why, you think if it was a gay guy playing him, he wouldn't have won?
Yeah, possibly not. Or really? No, he wouldn't have got cast in the first place. Yeah. It's still the same thing, you know?
Because the public can only handle pretend kisses.
Exactly, yeah. They can only handle a pretend gay.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, the whole film's about homophobia and everything like that, and you still think, well, homophobia is still a very big part of the movie industry.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. Yeah, definitely. Don't you reckon? Is that controversial?
I'm not sure it is, but it maybe it's right in a way, yeah. Like, in terms of how the outside world perceives it, yeah, this is getting a bit serious.
Yeah, yeah. Listen to Rupert Everett's, read Rupert Everett's biography, Red Carpets and Other Something. He talks about it at the end.
Okay.
It's interesting. Anyway, what was I saying? Oh, yeah, I was going to say that I was sad that Mickey Rourke didn't win.
That's sad, isn't it? But he's won lots of things.
He's won his Globe.
He's had a great year.
But you think once you've won the Globe, you're in a shoo-in for the Oscars. It's cruel to be robbed of the Oscar.
Listen to you. You're talking like Fern Cotton now. In a second, we're going to have a go at launching Text the Nation, listeners, but let's have a bit of music first. Are we going to have some Jimi Hendrix?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a guitar player from the olden days who used to set fire to things. This is called Purple Haze. Jimi Hendrix there with Purple Haze. This is Adam and Joe on BBC Six Music.
Excuse me while I kiss this guy.
Does he say that?
Yeah, sounds like it. Excuse me while I kiss this guy. Sounds like that's what he says.
You're obsessed with kissing guys.
Listen, if my comments about the homophobia rampant in the Hollywood film industry are removed from this week's podcast, then I quit! Okay?
You're really taking a stand.
I am taking a the time is now for me to stand up and be counted.
Who do you think should have played Milk in Milk if it wasn't Sean Penn?
Rupert Everett.
Do you think that would have been good?
Yes, he would have done a great job. He's a great actor.
He's more flamboyant.
It's true. I mean, he's physically ungainly maybe and less suited to the role than Penn was.
He's very tall.
He's not ungainly, but you know what I mean? Like,
Milk,
he's big
I don't
and gangly.
Think Milk was, yeah, Milk wasn't that tall, but they could have they could shorten him with CGI.
Exactly. They could squash
like
him down.
Like in Forrest Gump. He'd be on his knees with slippers on his knees and then blue over the bottom of his legs. Blue screen legs.
Exactly.
Yeah, they photoshopped my legs out.
He could easily do it. He could do the accent. He could do any of that stuff. You know, and it makes me absolutely sick that they just had to go to Sean Penn. As great an actor as he is. What are we going to... We should launch Text the Nation, right?
Yes, we should.
Should we have the jingle jungle, Ben?
Text the Nation. Text, text, text. Text the Nation.
What if I don't want to?
Text the Nation.
But I'm using email. Is that a problem?
It doesn't matter. Text.
So, listeners, I was looking through my vinyl this week to try and find something to play. I'll be playing something off vinyl a bit later. But I came across a kind of a valuable collectible.
Oof.
That when I first acquired it, I thought was going to be like a sort of family heirloom.
Right. What was this Beatles, signed Beatles record?
No, this is a signed copy of The Lexicon of Love. By ABC.
That is a classic album.
Yes, yeah, signed by all of the band.
No way.
Martin, Tristan, Herbert and Tony.
Wow.
What are their names?
Yeah, Martin, Tristan, Herbert and Tony.
Yeah. They all signed it in silver.
Yeah.
And I bought it in Woolworths, the late great Woolworths.
Where did you get it signed?
It was just on the shelf. They'd been in for a signing. They'd oversigned.
Right.
And there were some leftover ones.
Hard to believe.
I remember how excited I was at the time. I thought this was like finding, you know, the golden idol in Raiders or something.
Or Nemo.
Finding Nemo, exactly. As if I'd sort of stumbled upon the world's most precious thing. But 25 years later, looking on eBay, $29.99 for a signed vinyl copy. Not bad, you think?
I would think, I would have thought about 15 quid for a
really?
Signed copy.
Really? I was expecting triple figures. So our question for you in Text the Nation this week, listeners, is what's the most valueless bit of pop culture collectible? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
What's the most valueless, pathetic pop culture collectible you've got?
Yeah.
Like a thing that you thought was really precious maybe 10, 15 years ago, or maybe even recently, that, you know, you've stopped your partner from clearing out of the house. Maybe you've packed it in bubble wrap in the loft. But you fear now that it's absolutely pathetic and worthless.
I mean, I've got crates of that stuff.
Really?
Literally crates, about 5 or 6 crates of stuff that I cannot throw away because I think, ooh, no, can't throw away the very first Lord of the Rings plastic cup from the...
You've got one of those?
Yeah, yeah. You know, I got a big...
What sort of a cup?
Well, it's like a Big Gulp thing.
Oh, I've got a Fifth Element Big Gulp.
And it's got lenticular on it, so when you turn it round,
wow.
Frodo's doing things. I mean, it's a... I thought...
How much do you think that's worth?
Well, absolutely nothing. I would say 30p, 50p
Lord
maybe.
I'm going to find out now.
All I've done, the only thing I do with it now, and I wince to think of it now, is that at some point my wife used it to put some paint in. She was doing some painting.
Right.
She put a bit of paint in there.
Here they are. 3 Lord of the Rings Return of the King holograph cups. Are yours Return of the King? That's the last film.
Oh, maybe it is Return of the King. Yeah, how much?
$3.99 for 3.
That's more than I thought.
Really?
$3.99 for 3.
$3.99 for 3
That's
on
still
eBay.
More than I thought. But I've still got those, even though they're covered in paint now and everything, and totally messed up. They wouldn't even be worth $3.99 for 3.
The text number is 64046, listeners. Text us in the most worthless, pathetic item of collectibles that you possess.
The other thing, this is... Are we extending this to hoarding in general or not really? I mean, we've talked before about things that you can't throw away, like my collection of Mojo magazines and stuff
right.
like that. Which I still don't understand
well,
why.
Well, some of those have collectible. I mean, the word collectible is used very, very loosely, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's as if all you have to do is write it on something and then that object becomes collectible.
Yeah.
You could write it on some litter or a wall or a tramp's head or something.
And then if you put a signature on it as well.
Right.
Then it becomes really...
But magazines sometimes have collectible issues, right?
Yes.
Empire always do. Like for Empire's birthday, was it? They had 100 different covers. So presumably somebody out there's collected all 100 and is expecting them to increase in value. Mojo ever do that?
Sometimes, yep. They had the Beatles covers.
Like, haven't they got some Who covers at the moment? 2 Who covers. One of Pete Townsend and one of like the old sellout Daltry. Covers.
Oh, right.
I think they've got collectible covers at the moment. Are they worth anything?
Well,
surely not.
At the moment, they're probably worth about $4.50 or whatever.
Right,
the
whatever the
costs.
Cover price is.
Yeah, but no, I mean, I can't believe that they would be worth anything, even in 100 years' time, really. Mm. They would be worth marginally more than the cover price. I'm very happy to be corrected if that's not the case.
But the stories we'd like, I suppose, it's a sort of ratio of how coveted they are to how worthless they are.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? The lengths you go to protect them, to stop people throwing them out, to take care of them, not to have them damaged, to pack them away. And then, as time passes, you realise that you've completely wasted your time.
Because I did find a load of stuff the other day that I've kept with me, not exactly collections of stuff, but I had loads of packets of photographs, like old school photographs that I'd taken to the printers and got back, you know, and kept them all religiously, wouldn't throw any away. You know, like now with digital photography, when you're skimming through them, right?
Mm.
and organizing them, if you're that organized, then you get rid of all the blurry ones, right? And the ones that are absolutely rubbish, you just trash them. But you didn't do that, really, with old school photographs. You'd keep every single one, even if it was a bit blurry.
I'm not sure photographs count.
Do they not?
Well, they're not really acquired, are they?
Yeah, but it's things that you find difficult to... No, that's a different topic, isn't it?
Yeah. It's good, though. Listen, here's some... the tech number is 64046. Here's some vinyl. We said last week we were gonna bring some vinyl in and play some vinyl, but... what's happened is I brought it in this morning, and then our producer Ben said we couldn't actually play it, spin it live in the studio. We had to sort of burn it off a turntable onto digital. Are you upset that I've told them that?
Well, it comes to the same thing. It's a completely pointless thing to admit. Yeah.
Do you think?
Well, it's obviously you're going to be broadcasting it digitally anyway, because that's the way that this radio station is broadcast.
True. I wanted to hear the needle go on the vinyl and the popping and stuff.
You wanted to put the needle on yourself is what you wanted and fool around with it. And maybe tickle the stylus a bit.
Yeah, maybe that would have been rubbish anyway. But see if you can hear any sonic difference in the quality of this recording that's come off vinyl. This is Orange Juice from their EP, The Orange Juice. Or was it an album, The Orange Juice? This is called I Guess I'm Just a Little Too Sensitive.
You can definitely hear that it's vinyl.
Do you think?
Yeah, because you can hear the treble on the hi-hat there is a little frayed. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, the bass is supposed to be a
fuzzy,
bit more sort of warm and deep on vinyl, isn't it? Because digital recordings tend to sort of crispify everything.
Mm.
They're quite trebly, aren't
they? We're using all the technical terms.
Crispify.
Crispify, frayed.
But you know when you get a low-quality digital recording and it sounds as if, you know, it's being channeled by aliens.
All the compression is horrid, yeah.
Yeah, and there's weird tones and notes and sort of a sort of tinny, whistly sound to everything.
Yeah.
It doesn't have that, does it?
No, it does not have that. No, it is much more warm and analog.
I tell you who'd like that.
Who?
Your bloke that likes analog things.
M. Ward.
Yeah, he'd love that.
He would absolutely love
that. That's the only track he'd like on today's show.
Yeah.
He'd be furious about the rest.
Be absolutely livid.
Livid? Let's not hear how that would sound.
Why did you make that face then?
Because
like
I thought you were going to go livid.
You wanted me to go livid?
Yeah, but I'm enjoying getting you excited, then stopping it.
Winding me down again?
Yeah.
Now it would be insane for me to go livid. Why were you doing that?
Because of the expression on your face. You're like a little geezer that's about to blow his
puppet
top.
Puppet man. I'm not your bouncy puppet man with dyslexia. Why have you come in this morning thinking, I'm going to treat Adam like a bouncy puppet man? I'm going to accuse him of having dyslexia. I'm going to tease him. I'm going to take him to the brink.
Coming in the morning.
I'm going to take him to the brink of blowing his top. And then I'm going to pull him right down
again.
It's
so easy, though. It's just
Why
fun.
Do you think it's easy? It's easy.
You know what? I wish everybody could come in and have the fun that I have.
It's easy because I want to make you happy.
Oh dear.
Let's have some music, man.
No, let's have a trail.
Oh, a trail, is
it? Yeah, trail for merchants.
Merchants back. It's not my favourite Blur track.
Did you watch Damon and what's his name, Mr. Cox, playing together for the first time in ages
no, I
at the NME Shockwave Awards?
No, I missed the Shockwave Awards.
So did I. I had to go to bed because it was about midnight last night. I had to be up early.
What were you doing watching it even, thinking that there might be some bad behaviour?
I turned on and I saw Charlie Brooker give an award to the Boosh.
Oh.
And that was amusing. And I remembered our time at the NME Awards.
Oh, yes.
When was that?
It's burned
10
into my
years
mind.
Ago or something?
Around, yeah.
And it was not a happy experience for either of us. We were accepting an award on behalf of Travis. Or something.
That's right, yeah.
But it was so rowdy, it was unpleasant. Somebody kicked over the podium.
Gruff Rhys.
Was it Gruff Rhys? Yeah. It was scary. It was like one of those school assemblies where it gets out of control and the teachers can't control
anything. Mogwai were screaming abuse at people.
People were swearing. It wasn't very fun, was it?
No.
But times have changed and things have become more conservative, and it was a bit like the Brits, it seemed a very problem-free
well-healed.
And sort of respectful NME awards.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's why I was watching.
And how were Albarn and...
Didn't see them.
You didn't?
No. I'm sorry I brought it up.
Well, so am I. I'm sorry that I said that it wasn't my favourite Blur song. It's not a constructive thing to say after you've just listened to a piece of music.
No.
You know what I mean? If the DJ ostensibly is playing the music and then he says, yeah, I didn't really like that
one. Yeah, why would we play it if you don't even like it?
Well, it was on the playlist, but I mean, I love Blur, right? And I do like that song, but it's not my favourite. Plus, it has that very slow... which is deliberately designed to fox DJs, right? Presumably, that's part of it.
At the beginning.
Yeah.
Mm.
And it just creates a gap in the soundscape of the show where people think, oh, they've messed up. And actually, no, they haven't. It's just the blur and their sonical games. And I hate that!
Much hate today.
Just getting it out of my system. It's nice, this program. Listen, I went to see Bolt, right? I'm changing the subject.
You did it in the middle of a sentence. Yeah, I like that.
I abandoned it. I absolutely jumped ship. I went to see Bolt. It's about a dog, and it was
In 3D.
It's in 3D. I went to see the 3D version. When you go and see these films, you have a choice of seeing the normal 2D version, or you can go to a 3D screening.
It's in Real D, in fact.
Is it?
There are two rival 3D systems, Real D and Dolby.
Right.
Yeah. I met the guy that runs Real D when I was in America. He was very nice.
Was he?
His name was Josh.
I bet he's nice.
He invited me to come over and look at some 3D things.
Yeah. Why don't they call it Reality?
Because they're not as clever as you.
Yeah, that's the reason, isn't it?
Reality.
Yeah. I mean, Real D. I mean, they're just missing a trick not calling it Reality.
You're right.
I would think.
Yeah. Well, that's another conversation,
isn't
it?
Why am I not more famous and rich? I just can't understand it. So it is another conversation. I went to see it in 3D or Real D or whatever you want to call it. And I saw about four or five trails for forthcoming CG-based attractions in a similar vein. All in 3D.
The Monsters versus Aliens.
Monsters versus Aliens was in there.
Coraline,
yeah, that looked really good. About a little girl who finds a portal in her house to a magical land where everything's slightly different. By the guy who did Nightmare Before Christmas.
It's a Neil Gaiman book, yeah. Henry Selick.
Right, yeah. Looks great.
Done it.
Anyway, all these things were in 3D, and it was pretty gobsmacking. The 3D is amazing now, right? And you've got these little glasses that look... They're slightly larger Wayfarer or Ray-Ban.
Yeah, they're not red
glasses.
And blue anymore.
No.
They're just like sunglasses. They're polarized.
It looks like everyone is wearing Blues Brothers-style shades in there, and they're just slightly large. It doesn't look too ludicrous. Mm. Everything about seeing a 3D film has been sort of fixed. And the 3D itself is amazing. The most amazing thing is the company logos that come at you, right?
Yes.
For all the actual makers of the 3D and stuff, to the extent that they were even gasps in the auditorium a couple of times, right? Appreciative gasps and whoops of joy at a couple of the 3D bits before the film started. Then Bolt starts, right? Bolt's a good fun film. Children really enjoyed it. Actually, that's not entirely true. My son Frank didn't enjoy it so much because you know the premise of Bolt.
Yeah, I hear that Bolt's not that sympathetic himself, is he? He's an arrogant dog.
He's quite an arrogant
dog. He thinks he's got superpowers.
Well, the film is about a dog who genuinely believes that he is a super dog.
It's a bit Truman Show-y, isn't it?
Right. And he discovers throughout the course of the film that actually that's not the case. He's just a normal dog who was part of a TV show where he'd been conditioned to believe that it was actually real. And my son was very disappointed when that happened because what's fun about that? He wants to see a film about a dog with real powers. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Like, if you're a 7-year-old, being told that actually, in reality, you don't have superpowers is not a fun thing to be told. Anyway, so he was a bit disappointed about that. But no one could quibble with the quality of the actual 3D.
No quality quibble.
No quality quibbles there. Oh, no. It actually seemed real and happening. I was in there.
Yes.
For about 10 minutes.
Mm.
And then my brain adjusted, and I completely forgot that I was watching a 3D film. And my brain did what a brain always does when you go and see a 2D film. It took you into the film and made you forget that actually it wasn't happening. I'm not explaining this well, but if you go and see a 2D film, right?
Yeah.
Then after a while, if you're sufficiently absorbed and enjoying the film, you forget about the fact that it's 2D. You're in there.
Yeah.
And the same thing happens in reverse when you see a 3D film, right?
Yeah.
And I was thinking, like, why are they plunging all this money and excitement into a technology that actually is...
I know, the problem...
Cancels itself out.
The problem is I know too much about this.
Right.
And it's not very entertaining.
Yeah.
And it'll go on for ages.
But why
I mean, I really do know too much about the Z-axis.
Yeah.
Axis, rather.
But why do they think people need to see films in 3D when
Josh, the head of Real D, I asked him exactly this. I said, does it wear off? And he said, no, it doesn't wear off, because the main application for this technology is military simulators, where they have to sit and they have to sit and watch it all day.
Yeah.
So if it wore off, then our boys in the military, girls, would be endangered.
But for a cinema audience...
So he claims that it doesn't wear off.
It does wear off. It doesn't wear off. You're still... If you remind yourself... consciously.
Oh, but you just forget about the effect.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you're no longer amazed by
it. You become more absorbed.
But that's the thing. Do you? I just don't know if you do. I just think you watch it and after a while, after you're used to it, your brain adjusts and that whole part of the experience is eliminated and you're just watching another film.
Maybe.
And the fact that it's projected in 3D is completely meaningless.
Yeah.
And actually, if it was suddenly in 2D, you would sort of think for a second, oh, it stopped being 3D. But again, you would get used to it in 5 minutes and it would just be a normal
film. I can't answer this.
I want you to answer it!
Oh, God.
I'm going to stop shouting now. But it's interesting, though.
It is interesting. Yeah, no, it is interesting. It is interesting. Let's just have a little think about it. Okay, some music. Should we have some music? Here's Doves. We're going to come back to that.
Come back to it in 20 years' time, right? When the industry has woken up to the fact that they are wasting their time!
That's Doves with Kingdom of Rust. This is Adam and Joe on BBC Six Music. It's time to catch up with some Text the Nation submissions.
Let's have the jingle.
Text the Nation. Text the Nation.
What if I don't want to?
Text the Nation.
But I'm using email. Is that a problem?
It doesn't matter. Text.
Text the Nation this week is all about the most pathetic collectible thing you've ever bought. Something that claims it's going to be valuable and is collectible and, oh, mustn't be thrown away or in any way damaged, that years later is clearly worthless and a complete waste of time.
I still have my train spotting VHS collectible set with free glasses.
Oh, free glasses? Oh, free shot glasses.
No. Like shades with orange glass in them.
Yeah, cool.
Round spectacles with orange glass. I mean, no, not cool. And also a Rizla holder. And basically, it was
a drugs kit.
Yeah, it was like a bit of lame drugs paraphernalia, along with the copy of the film. And I think the script as well.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I didn't buy it for the film.
It's collectible.
I wanted the glasses and the Rizla holder and the lighter.
Yeah.
With train spotting written and across the side.
Syringe.
How much do you think that would be worth?
I don't know. It's easy to find out these days on eBay.
Yeah.
I could find out. Make a little note of it.
Now, can you do it now? I think it'd be fun radio.
Do you think? The tip-tapping on the keys.
Let's have some texts from people then.
Here is one from John in Bristol. He says, hi, guys. In 1997, I spent a whopping £20 on a 12-inch copy of the Manic Street Preachers' debut single, apparently signed by the whole band from a record shop in Norwich.
Mm.
It's where you live.
Yeah, you always say that. Oh, look, Norwich,
it's exciting.
Adam. Yes.
Even though the shop owner was arrested for forging autographs the following month, And it was all signed in an unconvincing crap biro. Did you listen to that last bit?
Yes, I did, yeah.
Arrested for forging autographs. He still can't throw it away. It lives in his dad's loft. So that's a forged, signed Manic Street Preachers debut single.
That's insanity.
Wow, that's quite a good idea for raising money, isn't it?
Forging stuff.
Yeah.
No, it's not a good idea.
You know, laws are going to have to be pushed a bit in the recession, aren't they? That's what I say in court.
What does that mean?
So, Mr. Cornish, would you like to make a statement? Yeah. You know, a little bit grey area.
Yeah, but what is forgery? That? Well, Mr. Cornish, forgery is when you deliberately mislead people into thinking that something is signed by Richie Manick and actually
maybe
it's just you.
Maybe that's a better Text the Nation. I had an idea for raising money. Oh, I won't go into that, actually. It's a different Text the Nation.
Criminal. What criminal behaviour?
Well, it could be a good Text the Nation. Things that are just on the edge of
legality. A little bit dodgy.
Yeah.
Or forging a signature of someone and selling an album.
Yeah, but can you prove it?
Yes,
what if the Manics were drunk that day? What if they were hungover and their hands were a bit shaky? Can the Manics prove that it's not their signature?
Graphologists are employed to do exactly
they're
that.
They're fallible.
No, they're not.
Aren't they?
No.
Okay. You win. Case closed. Here's another one from Pierre in Birmingham. Hello, Adam and Joe. I went to great lengths of sneakiness and subterfuge to swipe a towel from off the stage at a Polyphonic Spree gig. That's a bad start.
Sweaty
already.
Towel.
There's about 40 of them. Just random people turn up for that band. He continues, I've kept it safe in my room for about 8 years, convinced it's a piece of rock history, when in reality, it's just a plain white towel like any other.
Ah, well, that's a different debate.
There is
though,
a lead
it?
Guy in the Polyphonic Spree, isn't there?
Yes.
But they're a collective.
Name? Happy Johnny Happy
Johnny
Face.
Happy Johnny Face.
Yeah.
They are a collective, though.
They're like a commune, aren't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, so that's...
No, there are loads, as you say, and you would imagine that the value, the provenance of a sweaty towel would be hard to establish and also hard to care about.
Well, Pierre in Birmingham cared about it. Well done, Pierre. Keep hold of it. Don't let it go. Stephen Sheffield says, we have a prized white towel from an NERD gig, which my wife fought
tooth and nail for at the gig.
Wow.
You know how frenzied people get at gigs when they throw something out?
Absolutely.
People go mad. Even if it's just some free promotional single, it suddenly, whilst flying through the air, attains an enormous worth, doesn't it?
You know what? It always makes me sad whenever I see it happening. Whenever, like, a guitarist out there, because sometimes they make very over-the-top gestures.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll even lob a whole...
Why does it make you sad? Because of the behaviour of the audience? A kind of prehistoric...
Yeah, no, it makes me sad because I always think, I wouldn't get it. I wouldn't get it. Then shove me out of the way.
You want to be in there scrabbling for it?
No, I don't. I hate scrabbling. It makes me anxious.
You just want to be given it?
Yes.
Instead of it being thrown out.
Please, can I have it? Please, can I have it?
I was going to throw this out, but I'm going to give this to Adam. That's my Pharrell impression. Thanks.
Thanks, Pharrell.
What's the end of that?
I hate scrabbling. It's awful.
Did I finish that one? Yeah, his wife fought for the towel, tooth and nail, at the gig. It turned out to be a brand new IKEA towel. Worthless. So it hadn't even been wiped on Pharrell's
Because
head.
Here's the thing, as an addendum to my comments there, right?
Mm.
I always imagine the feeling of disappointment of the person right next to it, because sometimes the item lands in one person's hand,
yeah,
and then someone else in the crowd will snatch it off them.
Yeah.
And how are you going to be happy for the rest of that gig if someone's just nabbed the drumsticks off you?
Now I've remembered the idea for Text the Nation.
Right.
But we can do it next week.
Okay.
I'll tell you about it. It was for a manifesto for behaviour at gigs.
Okay.
Because I saw the Fleet Foxes.
Yes.
And there was some poor behaviour there.
We're going to talk about that later on, though,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we'll talk about that later.
Okay.
Another one, then. This is one from Eddie in Leicester. I have a life-size Adamant cardboard cutout stuck in the loft that my wife thinks is priceless. Frankly, it gives me the willies. I'm not surprised.
Might give her the willies, too.
That's probably quite valuable, though, isn't it?
Yeah, surely.
That sounds cool.
I like cardboard cutouts.
Yeah.
You know those cardboard cutout policemen they have in supermarkets?
No.
Have you not seen them?
No. What, to make you think you're being watched?
Exactly.
No.
Yeah, the constabulary have decided it's a genius mind plan. They've got life-size cutouts of constables standing there looking serious, and they're putting them in public places.
Constable cutouts?
Yeah. To make people just feel that there is a police presence.
Morning, constable cutout.
And I keep thinking I would love to steal one of those.
Really?
Yeah.
They're not so that people think that it's a real policeman out of the corner of their eye, are they?
It's just to instill a feeling that there is a presence
there. Really?
Are
they mounted on skateboards?
A feeling of authority.
On the end of a bit of rope?
No, they're not. That's a stupid
one
idea.
Of the men behind
That's
the delicatessen counter.
Stupid idea.
Pulls them along the bottom
pathetic,
of the
pathetic corner. Just pathetic, stupid response to a brilliant idea by the Met Police.
Constable cutouts on patrol. No nicking.
With just a member of the staff behind the
Otherwise,
cutout saying,
can you put that back, please? He might take you to paper court and give you a foldy fine.
Give you a paper cut to put you off.
Any more, or should we come back to these? Let's have one more.
Yeah.
This is from Jake. I have a Daphne and Celeste autograph.
That is absolutely worthless, I'll tell you right now.
It's pride of place on my pin board. I'm 23. My punk band was playing at the same free festival in Cambridge as they were when I was about 15.
I would say that
we got them ironically, of course.
Yeah, 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 sure.
Says Jake. But doesn't irony wear off after a number of years?
Irony certainly wears off very quickly, and it's worth
yeah,
nothing
and what's
financially.
That? That's 8 years now. Yeah. Irony can't last 8 years. It means you're a fan of Daphne and Celeste.
Like David Quantick. He was always an advocate of theirs.
Really?
Yeah, I always remember him championing them. But there you go.
Keep those coming in, please, listeners. The text number is 64046, the most worthless bit of pop cultural collectible ephemera you've got.
So, Ben, are we playing the trail and then my free choice? Is that the way it's going to work? Yeah.
Do your free choice first.
Then. Do my free choice first. Yeah. I like that idea better, because then it all gets a bit muddy and confusing.
Then that way it's about you sooner.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's the and then I'm happier, more happy. This is the Electric Six, and it turned up on my... I wasn't a huge, massive fan of the Electric Six album when it came out a few years ago, but actually it's one of those things that's popped up on my MP3 player on random, and this track really jumped out, and I thought, wow, how could I have missed this the first time round? This is Synthesizer by the Electric Six. And Ben, our producer, is lining it up right now, and I'm filling for him while he does so. Thumbs up. Here we go. See, it faded out in the end, didn't it, Ben? You thought it was going to be a big crash-bang-wallop ending, but no, that song goes on for about 15 years, if you don't fade it out. This is Adam and Joe here on BBC Six 6 music, and I wish they would read the news. I wish they could wrap the news in the same kind of style. Mm. But some people think that that's not the way to go with the news.
Trivializes the news.
Apparently, for some people, it trivializes.
It's a shame, because kids would like it more.
But there you go. These are the times we live in. It's just gone 10:30. Time for the news. It's the ethereal, folky sound of Fleet Foxes with He Doesn't Know Why. Who was talking there?
Somebody was talking. What was that, Ben? What's going
someone
on?
Just
was very
talking
weird
at the end there.
How dare they? But, you know, I went to see Fleet Foxes at the Roundhouse in London last Sunday evening.
They were playing 3 nights there?
Something like that, yeah. And unfortunately, kind of stupidly, I mentioned at the end of the show that I was going to be there. And I think I may have encouraged some Stephen shouting.
Right.
For people that don't know about this or have just started listening, this is not something that Adam and I have actively encouraged, right? Well, I suppose we have a little bit. But listeners to this show have taken it upon themselves to do a call and response thing when they're in public. One of them shouts Stephen, the other one shouts Just Coming. It's a way for people to connect with each other who listen to the program. We've tried to just let this thing grow naturally.
Networking. People love networking.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, it happened a lot at the Fleet Foxes gig.
Right.
Before the show, there was one, as I went in and went up the stairs, there was a very loud one from close behind me.
Yeah.
And I was just giving the woman my ticket, so I didn't even look round on that one. There were lots of people there.
You are that ultimate Stephen denier.
Wait a second, though. I get into the gig, and then there was one very loudly from right beside me.
Yeah.
And I went and I spoke to that guy. It was a guy I didn't know. I spoke to him.
Oh, yeah.
You've got to let me off the hook for the first one. It was very crowded. You think I should have turned around and waved?
How hard is it just to say, just coming? That's the point of the thing. Of course it's embarrassing.
Okay.
Tough luck.
But then there was, after the first song the Fleet Foxes played, there was a very loud one from the upper circle, I think, or somewhere quite a long way away from me. And that got lots of replies from the audience.
Yeah.
And the Fleet Foxes were kind of baffled. They said, the lead singer said, you guys talking to each other? Like that.
Yeah.
He felt a bit, I think, left out of the exchange.
This is the problem. Yeah. This is the potential problem with the whole Stephen thing.
But anyway, the rest, there was a lot of general, not heckling, but people shouting out random phrases and stuff to them. And they're a very laid-back band, so they enjoyed it and they were shouting back and people were, you know, requesting weird songs, shouting out Bob Dylan and stuff. And in the end, he played a Bob Dylan track because people were shouting out Dylan's name so much.
Yeah.
So they're an affable sort. They don't mind that kind of thing. But we've had various emails from people who were at the gigs on the following nights.
Okay.
And here's one from a guy who's actually called Stephen, I think. He says, you've probably already been told this by other people, but I thought I'd chip in just in case. I was at the Fleet Foxes gig on Monday night and heard someone shout Stephen. Before I had a chance to reply, as I feel being named Stephen, I have an extra right to do, the lead singer of the Fleet Foxes got there first. He laughed a lot and said something along the lines of, I'm onto you, I'm onto your little social interaction thing there. So clearly someone had done it the night before. Well, they certainly had done it the night before.
I'd call balls night.
Then here's another one from Lucy, who was, I think, at the same concert, and she says, just as the applause died down from one of their tracks, what should ring out from the back of the auditorium but a loud explosion of Stephen? As if not shocked enough by this sudden outburst, with lightning quick reactions, a chorus of coming rebounded back from the stage. Yes, the Fleets, as Robin Pecknold stated, are onto you. We know there is no actual Stephen, he said. This was greeted with much laughter, particularly from myself and my boyfriend, for whom it was our very first public experience of Stephen.
Oh, well, that's a happy Stephenage incident then.
So they're onto it. And the reason is that they came into Danny Wallace's show during the week, right? And Danny Wallace and his broadcasting partner, Richard, explained it to the Fleet Foxes. Here's a clip of that explanation.
Someone shouted in the audience, someone shouted Stephen, and then on the other side, someone shouted, coming! Do you remember that at all?
Kind of.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Did you know what the hell was going on?
No. Is that
Stephen was going to meet his buddy.
There you go. Well, that will explain that. Well, thanks for
transpired there.
There was a lot of robust interactions last night.
I can clear this thing up for you so that you don't have sleepless nights. There's actually a couple of presenters on this show called Adam and Joe, and they have this thing that anyone that listens to them, randomly a person just out in the open can shout Stephen, and if someone else is in on it, they'll just shout coming, and then you know that in the world there's like-minded people, so it was a friendly, happy thing.
So yeah, it's like Twitter.
Very much. Live yeah. Twitter is live, what
like,
that was.
Yeah, like analog Twitter.
Analog Twitter.
I believe they used to call that talking.
There you go.
Yeah.
So the final punchline to this whole story is the Fleet Foxes then set off to play in Paris, and we have a correspondent in Paris, two correspondi, Nick and Caroline, who say, "Dear Adam and Joe, international Stevenage here from France, already weak-kneed with excitement about seeing the Fleet Foxes play in Paris, and the prospect of actually letting a Steven loose into the audience reduced me to jelly. Wait until the first few songs went by, someone else shouted something, the Foxes looked confused, so to put them at ease, I shouted Steven. Whereupon the lead singer, Robin Pecknold, quick as a flash, said, 'Just coming. Do you guys have that here too?'"
Wow. International Stevenage.
There you go.
But do you think he is going to be quite annoyed and fed up by it?
Well, it's funny how it seems to have targeted the Fleet Foxes specifically. I mean, why would it? Is it because I said I was going to that concert?
I'm sure.
Or do you think it's just a band that listeners to this show enjoy?
Yeah, you know, we all love the Fleet Foxes.
Everybody loves the Foxes.
They're a very quintessential six music type band as
well. I did feel a bit responsible on Monday.
Because there must be people there as well who find it irritating.
Baffling and annoying. Yeah.
And it interferes with their enjoyment of the gig. Because especially Fleet Foxes, you would imagine it's quite a sort of hushed, not to say reverential atmosphere, when people aren't shouting, "Steven!"
Well, people heckle at gigs anyway. It's something you deal with generally, isn't it?
I suppose.
Right? It's sort of accepted. Not heckling, but trying to make contact with the band between tracks. That's all we ask, listeners, that you do it between tracks, not during them, right?
Yes.
We're trying to figure out our relationship to the Steven phenomenon.
But people would figure that out for themselves. You know, we've always encouraged responsible Stevenage.
Yeah, yeah.
And don't ruin the enjoyment of other people in whatever environment you happen to be.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm feeling bad that I didn't reply to the loud Steven. Yeah, do you think that's bad?
I would say that's the worst thing about the whole story.
Do you think?
Yeah.
Well, you're making me feel very bad and culpable.
You are bad and culpable. I was in a swanky club last night, right? And having a meeting with some people I wanted to impress. And this guy shouted out, "Steven!" as I was walking through. And I gave him a just coming back.
Oh, I would have replied. At a swanky club, I would have replied.
It was very embarrassing. Even he was embarrassed. Honestly, because when I came back from the loos, he went, "Oh, sorry about that." And it's because his friends looked baffled and looked at him like, "You're a bit of a loser. What are you doing at the swanky club?" So it was an embarrassing thing. But I gave him back the just coming.
I've replied to a couple in the street.
Couple.
It how many of you ignored this? Two.
More than two.
I think I'm 2-2.
Yeah.
Two up, two down.
Well, you're a disgrace, is all I can say. So sort your Stevenage out. Here's LaRue with In For The Kill. She just sounds out of control, don't you think?
She is an 80s revivalist. She's doing a sort of an Annie Lennox.
Yeah, but Annie Lennox has got real range, though. And
poor LaRue.
I'm not saying that LaRue's got a bad voice, just a little bit abrasive.
I think it's Brills. They're the London synth duo. They're the talk of the town. They're all the rage.
Yeah.
But proving that this 80s thing is out of control and it's sort of completed its comeback, right?
Yeah.
And to celebrate that, we are doing an 80s song wars next week, supposedly.
And we've got some rules for our 80s songs,
well,
right?
We do so far. We've kind of agreed that we're going to try and do the ultimate 80s song, a song that kind of harnesses every single 80s trope that exists.
Oh,
right?
Really?
Well, that's what I thought, even though I haven't started yet.
How would you do
started?
That music? Yeah, I've started.
Well,
I mean, I've
got some ideas.
For something fairly generic.
Have you?
Yeah.
What have you gone for?
Well, I don't want to tell you.
Why not?
Because it's secret. The thing is that there are so many pots. You could go for early 80s synth pop, right?
Yeah.
That's a classic
80s. Well, 80s was a long decade. Yeah. It was 10 years long.
It was. But I would say that if you went for something like, I mean, late 80s was the Stone Roses. That would not be...
I think you describe it as 90s music, the Stone Roses.
Yeah, well, of course, that's what I'm saying,
though. The 90s.
If you stick strictly to music that was produced in the 80s and ape that style, that's not going to give you
because
a classic
80s sound. Because there's everything from jangly guitar pop to synth pop to pomp rock.
Yeah,
the big
massive drums and synths and things like Take My Breath Away.
Yes, exactly.
That's very 80s.
There's sort of 80s metal is a very distinctive sound.
Right.
Isn't there? So that's four different.
But you know what? The thing is
down.
That the 80s
five,
revival.
If you include pomp pop.
I'm talking pomp pop. What the 80s revival really has honed in on is the early 80s synth sound, though, right?
Yes.
Synth pop. Well,
yeah, Eurythmics, Yazoo, The Human League.
Yeah.
Synthy stuff.
Depeche
Mode. It's the instrumentation they're keen on.
Yeah. Vince Clarke era Depeche
Mode. So that's where we've got to go, do you think?
I think so. I mean, then later on you got people like Paul Hardcastle and stuff like that. That still counts, doesn't it?
Mm. When was that single?
85?
Was it?
Something like that. Yeah.
Oh, well, lots of different directions to go, but I think I've got a good handle on where you're going. Now.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do.
No, you don't.
With my brilliant interrogation technique that's made you reveal your strategy.
Damn it. No, it might be.
No. I've done it.
I'm the world's worst liar. I can't cover anything up. It's disgusting.
Listen, here's a free play. This is a band called Hatcham Social, and they're really good. They sound and this is very reductive when people on the radio say things like that, but they do sound a bit like Orange Juice.
Yeah.
That's what's got me into them. He's got a slightly Edwin Collins-y sort of a voice.
Where did you come across them?
I came across them on another radio station, actually.
Ooh, you listen to other radio
stations.
Yeah,
but they have been played by... I think Queens of Noise, and also who does the rock show here? Mark Riley,
John Rock,
someone like that. They've been played by a couple of DJs on Six Music. They're the latest thing.
Oh,
Hatcham Social.
They're
named after a social club in Peckham, and they're from New Cross. And this is really good. I've been listening to this song all week. It's from their forthcoming album that's out at the beginning of next month, and it's called something like, if I remember rightly, "You Dig the Tunnel and I'll Hide the Soil."
You know, with a pen, you could have written that down.
I wanted to train my brain to remember things. Is that a good... And I'm going to try and remember what the single's called now without writing it down. I think it's called So So Happy... Oh, I can't remember.
So So Happy Making.
So So Happy Making. There you go. This is it. Hatcham Social.
That's good stuff, man.
Yeah, Hatcham Social. Can't wait for that album.
And you know what? It sort of disproves what I was saying about bands having latched onto just the synth pop sound of the early 80s. They're going definitely for that Orange Juice postcard record sound.
I was doing it very well.
Yeah, and the Wild Beasts, who we played a while back as well, they sound a bit like Orange Juice stroke, The Associates, that kind of thing.
But you still have to be able to write a good song.
Yeah.
And you still have to be able to sing in an interesting way.
Yeah.
And play, right?
I mentioned this book before on this show, but there's a book called Rip It Up and Start Again by Simon Reynolds.
About postcard?
Not about postcard, just about early 80s music in general, the whole sort of indie scene, and about all the music that we really loved from that time. It's such an enjoyable book to read. It really is. I highly recommend it. But I'm getting a bit emotional about the book. You know, like when you do you have this problem? Is it when you try and be sincere suddenly in the midst of all the glibness, your voice goes
on this program?
Sometimes, yeah. You kind of go the other way and you start getting a little bit emotional.
Well, it's peaks and troughs, isn't it? It's a very passionate program.
Is it? Peaks and troughs?
Yeah, fury. It's mostly fury. Quite a lot of bitterness and jealousy. And then occasionally some sincerity. And sometimes that can tip the balance. When you repress so much emotion,
yeah,
sometimes it will come leaking through.
It leaks through, yeah. And then it's very embarrassing. It's like a stain.
Yeah, just try and repress more.
Yeah. You need some sort of pad to soak up the sincerity.
Yeah, an emotion pad.
Yeah, sincerity pads.
Where would they go? Armpits.
Armpits. Is that where sincerity leaks out of?
Yeah. I don't know. No, it comes from the corners of the eyes.
Yeah, does it?
Water is leaking from their eyes.
Right.
It's what they call tears. It's a sign of their weakness.
As Emperor Ming says in the film Flash Gordon.
So much that Emperor Ming can teach you about.
There is. He should do some educational records for kids. You're quite right. Listen, we'll have some more Text the Nations very soon. What are we going to do now, then?
We're going to play a trail, and after that, it's your favourite Flaming Lips song, which reminds you that one day you'll be dead.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Thanks for that. But here's the trail.
This is the voice of the big British castle. It is the top of the hour, ooh, that's wonderful. I got so bored with the last hour, I'm glad it's gone. Now here's the new one, it's exciting and it's new. How do you do?
Yes, indeed. This is Adam and Joe here on BBC Six Music. We're in our last hour now here on a Saturday morning. And, sorry, I just looked at Joe and he was smiling. And it set me off a little bit. Because you were looking at your screen there.
My screen. Smiling. I was reading some texts.
There's no telling what you were smiling at. Right, now, come on. Get it together. Yeah? Let's have the jingle and get back into Textination. Come on.
Okay.
Textination. Text, text, text. Textination.
What if I don't want to?
Textination.
It doesn't matter. Text.
Do you want to have a go at reading one of these emails, Adam?
Yes.
I mean, just to test the dyslexia.
Yes.
What if I give you quite a long one?
Oh, I could do it.
And then you'll have to read it quite fast.
It'll be fine.
Okay, this is quite a long one. You're going to have to speed through.
This is not that fair because you've read it before even. All right, here we go. Text the Nation. Can you just remind people what Text the Nation
is
about?
Yeah, it's about the most worthless items of pop culture collectibles you have collected.
Right, this is from David. He is emailing from Singapore, and he says, at the climax of their concerts, Jethro Tull used to launch massive balloons about 5 feet in diameter with the Tull logo on them into the audience. Much fun would be had as the crowd punched the balloons around the auditorium. At their concert at Hammersmith Odeon in 1989 on the Rock Island tour, one of the balloons hit the ceiling light and burst as the deflated gas bag spiraled to the auditorium floor. I knew I had to have it. It's a giant Jethro Tull balloon. It didn't land that close to me, but that didn't make any difference. I muscled my way over to where it looked like it was going to land and made full use of my full 6 feet 4 inches height. Oh my God, he's a giant, this guy, to pluck it out of the air. Success! Of course, success. You're a freak of nature at 6 feet.
Oi, he's only an inch taller than me.
Yeah, I'm joking. I'm just jealous because I'm a little man. The glorious Tull keepsake was mine. For 20 years, I have guarded the burst balloon carefully because it's surely a valuable collectible item. About once a year, I would remove it from my box of mementos and keepsakes and look at it for about 11 seconds, enjoying its beauty. I overlooked the fact that it looks like a whoopee cushion with a hole in it on one side with a Tull logo on the other, because this was a rock treasure. Last year, Tull celebrated their 40th anniversary, the perfect time to cash in on interest in the band. I put it on eBay.
There you go. Dyslexia. I knew it would happen.
I put it on eBay expecting it to make £30 or more. I got no bids. I hate it now. Every time I look at it, I feel deflated. That's not the email. That's me talking to you.
Really?
Yeah. No, that's from David. Thank you very much indeed, David. I think you'll agree I read out your message really rather
you
well.
You did a ruddy good job. Thank you very much. I think you're off the hook. You're perfectly normal. Well done.
Thank you.
Here's one from Johnny. When I was 12, I visited New York with my godmother. This is a really good, pathetic bit of rock memorabilia. I made her take me to CBGB's.
Mm.
That's a famous rock bar, correct?
Yeah, of course. That's where the birth of punk occurred, amongst other things.
I expected to meet some cool bands there. However, it was the daytime. The only people there were some decorators. I wanted to get a souvenir to prove that I'd been there. And as there was nothing else around, I asked the decorator if I could take a roll of toilet paper, as there was a big box of them in the middle of the room. I took the toilet roll all round America with me and back home to England. I thought it would be obvious that the toilet roll was from CBGB's and that it would be valuable one day. It dawned on me that this wasn't the case when I was in the coach on the way back from Heathrow, and as time passed, I began to resent the toilet roll, which came to represent my painful transition from blissful ignorance to hardened cynicism. I still have the toilet roll, though, and for some reason, it still somehow seems valuable.
Yeah, that's insane, isn't it?
I want that toilet roll.
You know, when we were doing our TV show, we did a segment called Vinyl Justice where we went round to pop stars' houses and looked at their records.
Did we?
And we did Kinnicky one time. Of course, at that point, the band was fronted by Lauren Laverne, although she didn't show up on the day to actually do the interview.
No, she wanted the others to get a bit of the spotlight.
Right, right. But as we were leaving, I swiped a guitar pick.
You didn't?
Yeah. Because I was just starting.
You thought it would be super valuable?
I don't know. Yeah. And then
you still got it?
I still got it because, and I know it's the right one because I wrote Kinnicky on it with a silver pen to remind me that it was their
pick. Give it back to Lauren.
Well, I think it was one of the... It belonged to, what's her name? Emmy Montrose,
right.
I think she was called. So I'm sorry, I stole your pick.
That's disgusting. I'll give you two more.
But I've had it all this time and I've never thrown it away.
Here's a good one from Vince in London. This kind of counts. When I was a kid, I went to Disneyland and spent ages collecting all the autographs of the characters in the park in a special book, convinced that the signature of the actual Mickey Mouse just had to be worth something. But it's not. It's just a lie. That's true. They must be the most worthless signatures it's possible to obtain.
Yeah, absolutely. From an actor playing the character in a big suit.
Oh, the only thing worse than that would be one of those knockoff Mickey mice on the South Bank.
Uh-huh.
Or in Covent Garden, you know, the illegal ones that look like they've just come out of some sort of shelter.
Yeah. I used to get people asking me for my autograph when I was a DJ at a restaurant.
Did you?
You know, like children and stuff.
Yeah.
They'll ask anyone for their autograph.
Yeah.
And I always felt a bit fraudulent. I used to, like, I started off saying, you don't want my autograph, it's worth absolutely, it's there's no point. But then all the waitresses said, why don't you just shut up and make them happy? And so that's the thing, is you just don't mind, do you?
Did it make you a bit happy?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
First few times
but you feel important.
When the six-year-olds were clamouring, yeah.
Here's the very best one I think we've had in so far, though. This is from John in Manchester. I've got a drumstick wrapped in silver foil, which was thrown into the audience by the singer from Babylon Zoo before he was in Babylon Zoo.
Wow.
Should have sold it when Spaceman was number one.
What was he called? Jazzman?
Yeah.
Wow.
That is worthless.
Presumably that he had wrapped in silver foil, yeah.
Yeah, because it made it look like it was a space drumstick.
It's from space. In the future, people will have drumsticks like this.
It's an easy way to make anything look futuristic.
It's also very dangerous.
Wrap it in tin foil.
Because it becomes a kind of superconductive lightning rod.
Yeah, it's a sexy robot game you can play with your partner tonight. Just wrap a bit of yourself in tin foil.
And get an electric shock. Is it a sexy game? Have you done that? What is sexy?
Why would
about
you get
that?
An electric shock?
Well, if you put a current through it.
Why would you do that?
Yeah, make it more sexy.
Really?
I don't know. You're the one who's wrapping yourself up in tin foil.
Just encourage wrapping a part of your body in tin foil and pretending it's robotic. You're encouraging listeners to then
pass a low current through it to make it sexy. Yes.
That's a terrible idea, listeners.
You're the one wrapping yourself in foil.
Yeah, that's not intrinsically dangerous. You're the one passing electricity through that foil.
If you're going to wrap yourself in foil, why not pop a little current through it? Just like from a 9-volt battery
okay.
or something.
From
I'm not talking about connecting yourself up to the mains. Although, obviously I'm not talking about that. Obviously, if you're insane and you're listening to this program, please don't go and do that.
Listen, here's the Pet Shop Boys with what's this one called? Love Etc. Is this their new single? Oh, it might be. We're not really sure.
Yeah. It must be on the sheet, though, isn't it? On the sheet.
They were playing at the Brits.
Checking, did you see them at the
They're
Brits?
They're not very good at dancing.
Well,
they just stood there.
That's not their forte, though, is it? It was a.
True. I'm being sort of
it was
ironic.
An AV.
Yeah, this is their new single, I think. Right. Well, it's certainly from this year. This is called Love Etc.
Here's something that I got when I was extremely young. It isn't gonna kill ya, 'cause it is only juvenilia.
We've got another version of that jingle with an actual child singing it, which slightly excuses it a bit more. Do you think? I mean, it's a terrible jingle.
Have you got that one there, Ben?
You don't want to hear it immediately. That'll drive you insane. We're going to do more juvenilia later in the program.
I don't want to
hear it. Well, you'll have to wait, okay? Because we're breaking this up. We have such a wealth of stuff to play you from people that have very kindly sent in their juvenile recordings. And this is following on from some clips that Joe and myself played of us pretending to be DJs last
week. Yeah, and we have to tread carefully in this area because there can be sometimes nothing more sort of self-indulgent than playing clips like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Childhood clips. But some of the stuff we've had through is just so insane and brilliant that we have to play it to you. And thank you to everybody who sent through an MP3 file of their stuff. We did listen to them all and had a very good chuckle. But we've had to be slightly ruthless in paring it down to fit into the show, haven't we?
Yes, absolutely. And we might, I mean, if we get more stuff like this, we should do it as a regular thing. So we might play some of the other bits that we got on another show. But anyway, as far as today's concerned, we'll do maybe two or three of these. And I'm going to play you some clips right now from someone called Naomi. And here's the email that she sent. Dear Adam and Joe, I seem to be emailing you all the time suddenly, but I'm not a crazed weirdo. I just really want to get this nonsense recording to you. Here it is. It's an 8-minute MP3 of my radio show when I was a little idiot, she says. And we've cut it down, obviously. But it's all good stuff. She carries on. In the show, I seem to have a strong interest in John Major. Not sure why. It must be mentioned, though, that I didn't have a TV growing up. And so my reference to people was limited to mainly the news. Also, in the original recording, I say that John Major and Janet Jackson... Oh, yeah, that's...
No, that's quite good. She mentions in the original recording that they're going to have sex. And then a year later, she's so guilty about saying the word sex in her childhood recordings. Sorry?
We don't have that, Ben.
Oh, really? Well, it's funny anyway. She went and replaced it with the phrase...
Record token.
They're going to have a record token together. I thought that was nice, but we can't illustrate that.
She says, I hope you like the show. Basically, it was a very long clip, so what I've done is I've just cherry-picked a few bits that give flavour.
But this is amazing. How old was she when she recorded this?
Well, she doesn't actually say, and...
I think it was... Was it 11?
I think so. It was around that. We might talk to her on the phone afterwards.
Yeah, we can ask her. But this is... You've got to imagine a very young girl and a little tape recorder pretending to be a radio DJ.
So let's have the first clip from Naomi there, Ben.
It's real cool, that song. It's cool. It's by John Major. So it must be brilliant. Everybody around? Yeah! It's Brill! Right. Here is another tune. So, off we go. Oh, my darling bun of me. Oh, my darling bun of me. Macaulay Culkin, Brian Adams. This is a mixture of the ball. Oh, why are you over there? Why are you here? I don't know, but why are you over there in the drunken sea? Because I'm over here. Why can't you come over here? Why do I have to go over there? I'm too lazy. Right, that song was called Justice to the World.
I'm so lazy.
Why are you over there?
Sitting in your drunken seat.
That's incredible. Amazing. What's that record she's playing at the beginning?
That's her, I think.
Is it?
Yeah.
Wow, she's a very creative and talented young girl. Have we got another clip?
Yeah, we got a couple more clips. Here's a clip right now. She does another short song and references Danny Minogue in this
song.
She's
rapping there, right? She's being the DJ and then she became the record. She was rapping. She was the artiste.
Yes, exactly.
And that was a free bit of freestyle rapping.
Uh-huh.
Incredible.
And she does something a little bit similar here.
So now, if you don't mind, I'm going to play a tune with my voice, as I don't have anything else in my substance, and a hairbrush. So here I go. Danny Minogue! Danny Minogue! Sorry about that. That was rather a short burst. But it was actually sung by John Major, so it must be quite a good song indeed. Yes.
She's just gone.
Danny Minogue! Danny Minogue! That was John Major with his new single, Danny Minogue.
It must have been quite good.
Well, I'd want to live in that world. Major.
Yeah, that's an excellent radio show. Here's one final clip right now. Before we actually talk to Naomi, because I think we've got her on the phone, here's Naomi with the news.
Right, this is some more news on Radio 3 in the morning. Tonight, actually. So, and now, this more news I have for you is about George Bush. He set off his fire alarm to make everybody run to his house so he can have a bit of attention. More news in a minute. And the minute has gone very quickly because here I am again. This more news is about Paul Simon, the singer. He bought 10 donkeys and he's training them to do donkey rides at a fair. That is all I have tonight. How about listening to Michael Jackson blowing his nose? Bumblebee off his nose now. It stung him.
Wow. So she's using all like sound effects and everything.
That's
in there.
Incredible. We better get her on the line. Is she there? Naomi, hello.
Hello.
Wow. We're like completely blown away by that. How old were you?
Sorry?
How old were you is the first question to ask.
I think I was about 11.
Wow.
And how old are you now?
I'm 29.
29. Well done.
Yeah.
And
Thank you.
I mean, what was the music you're playing there? That insane synthesizer stuff?
The first one, it was, I think I had it on demo, and then I was on this little keyboard, and then I was switching between lots of different instruments and hitting notes. Just doing all I could at once, I think.
Wow. And, you know, you've got such an amazing repository of surreal juxtapositions and crazy names there. Where's all that coming from?
Who knows?
What was the John Major thing? Had you just found out, or you heard your parents talking about him or something?
I think I just found the name quite funny.
Yeah.
And I just like saying it, and the fact that I obviously knew nothing about politics, there's like an abstractness to it, I just said it. You know?
George,
it just sort of cracked me up to say his name.
George Bush setting his
burglar alarm off
to get
so
the
people
attention.
Would come over because he likes the attention. What was going on in your house then? Were you locked in your bed? Well, no, were you shut in your bedroom on your own there recording
those?
You know
what? I think I did, by choice, shut myself in my bedroom. I could do it for, you know, all day. I would just sit there doing it. And in fact, I got known for just leaving the tape recording in rooms and then going out.
Really?
I was just obsessed with my tape recorder, yeah.
Now, so what's your life turned into now, Naomi? What are you doing?
I manage comedians.
Do you really?
Yes.
What are you doing managing them?
Yeah, you should. Have you never been tempted?
Than most of the material that anyone I know comes out with.
That's right. That's like early Vic and Bob or something.
True, actually. Stand-ups aren't very funny, are they?
But you do radio as well now, isn't that right?
Yeah. I had a show on Resonance with my friend James the other night, and we're hoping to make that regular.
Wow.
And, you know, it's a mishmash of nonsense and stuff. Similar to that.
Do you feel you could ever capture that level of innocence and spontaneity without the use of drugs?
Again? Without the use of what?
I was just being glib. But do you feel you still got that...
It's funny, actually. When I was talking to the assistant producer before on the phone, and she was saying, it's funny listening to something and not imagining being able to do that, you know, and it's like another world. But it doesn't feel like that. I do sit down with my friend and we just sort of ad-lib nonsense sometimes.
So it's still, like, when you listen to it back, you can still hear yourself. Because sometimes when I listen back to, like, last
week,
the
thing with girls is the voice doesn't break. I mean, right. There is a tone. Yeah. There is a tonal change, isn't there? The thing that's so mortifying as a man is hearing your unbroken voice, and that really brings the
makes
sort of years
feel,
home, doesn't it?
Right, it makes you feel like a different
Naomi
person.
Naomi actually speaking to her now, it almost sounds like we're talking to the 11-year-old Naomi.
Well, the nice thing to hear is that, you know, the enthusiasm is still there in your voice. Life hasn't beaten you down.
I like the way you do your own audience as well.
I know.
Do all the cheering.
Oh. And in fact, a lot of the sound was just like, because you know those tapes with the radio on top, you know, you just switch between...
Yes,
so you
didn't
really know what you were going to get, which was part of the fun, just sort of saying something and then switching into the radio.
It's really great, it's fantastic.
Yeah, I bet, you know what, Naomi, I bet you're a really lovely person.
Yeah.
That's a little bit of sincerity leaking out of Joe there.
Leaking out of my eyes.
Naomi,
I bet you're lovely too.
No I'm a sod.
He's an idiot. have you got like a website? Do you ever post any of your clips up online and stuff?
No, but I do have, I have a MySpace with my friend James for our band, You and Me.
What's that called?
We Love You and Me is the MySpace.
I'd love to hear that stuff. Go and check it out.
It's a bit sort of Mouldy Peachesy type stuff.
Yeah.
Naomi, thanks so much for sending that stuff in. That's brilliant, and well done to you and to your childhood self.
Yeah, thank good.
You
that's
very
incredible.
Much.
Good luck with everything. We'll listen out for you on Resonance. Hope you get a regular gig there.
Thank you.
Cheerio.
Let's have a little more music. Bye bye. Then we'll come back to I said goodbye as if she was still 11.
That was
11.
Quite a patronising bye bye.
Bye bye, Naomi. Bye-bye. Careful on the stairs. Here's some music from Snow Patrol.
There you go. That's the sound of the future, kids. Deal with it. That's Passion Pit. By Sleepyhead. No, other way around, isn't it? All right, Grandad. It's just gone 11:30 and it's time for the news.
Who's that band then?
That was the Grass, man. Oh, that was the Mighty Supergrass with Grace. Wonderful to hear that. This is Adam and Joe here on BBC Six Music. And now, of course, yesterday there was a huge hoo-ha, not to say a diamond hoo-ha, in the centre of town because you two were playing a gig on the roof of Broadcasting House here.
Yeah, I got a lovely call from a BBC marketing lady inviting me to some drinks last night. She didn't make it clear that they were drinks overlooking the amazing gig. I said no, I had to get an early night because I had the show. And she said, are you sure?
Yeah.
I said, yes, I am sure.
I was going to try and make it, but I couldn't.
Apparently there were thousands of people in the street. And it was like a big rock phenomenon event.
Mm. Well, they're the biggest band in the world, aren't they?
Mm.
So we're told.
Mm.
But this is one of these things where you just kind of feel like, are they really the biggest band in the world? Or is it just one of these monikers that gets ascribed and then people just are happy to go along with
it? Well, I was thinking it's important to be balanced here at the BBC. And,
it is.
And the BBC have had a lot of U2 on this week, right? They've been all across the BBC. So surely it's right that two Six Music DJs should maybe spend 10 minutes being really rude about them.
Well, you can be rude about them. I'm not going to trash them because I don't want to rule out the possibility that I might one day be friends with them.
Right.
And that's the main thing for me is I don't want, you know, I want to hang out with them.
Well, one thing Bono was complaining about last night in his interview with Lauren Laverne was that apparently white musicians aren't allowed to run huge companies. He was saying it's all right for Jay-Z to run a huge franchise.
Oh, right.
But when white musicians do it...
Who's complaining about white musicians running companies?
I don't know, but this is what Bono seems to think. He seems to think that you two are less credible because they're interested in their business ventures.
Yes.
You know, that they're perceived like Richard Branson rather than a proper devil-may-care rocker.
Well, it's...
But he says that hip-hoppers... But isn't that because traditionally and historically African-Americans... have been disenfranchised and not allowed to run companies because of terrible racism. Isn't that argument?
Well, obviously that's part of it, but obviously in hip-hop as well, they're completely naked hip-hoppers
about their... But the whole point of white rock was that it was a reaction against the establishment and against all white people running companies.
And
you idiot,
the
Bono! For him to complain about some kind of inverse racism seems very disingenuous.
Maybe he wasn't complaining about inverse racism.
He was. Look, I'm trying to slap them off.
I know, but I'm trying to stand up for them for balance, right?
Okay.
Here's one thing, though. See how you can balance this one out. When he was playing on Jonathan Ross's show last night, they played a couple of numbers from the new album, and they sounded fine and everything, and Bono started wandering around in the audience. But because he still does all his moves, even though he's now of a certain age and he's filling out in that way that men do when they reach a certain point. Morrissey is, and we all are. And then he still does all his young man rock moves. Like he leans on his amps, he leans forward, he does the classic Bono moves. And he obviously feels like even in a TV studio, he's got to do something slightly outrageous. And so he sort of wandered off the riser there and wandered around the TV studio audience. He didn't really know what to make of it.
They're supposed to be trying to touch the hem of his coat, aren't
they? A couple of people were reaching forward and said, "Go and touch me, please, Saint Bono." And then he went and just lay down on some people's laps. And you could see the camera. They weren't really touching him. They didn't really know what to do. They had their hands in the air sort of going... What should I do if there's an Irish man lying on me? Should I touch him or feel his leather jacket or just leave him alone until he gets up again? And that's really... And they had a shot of him and he just had his arms folded. He was looking sort of, you know, just having a little nap. I'm a bit tired after all the jumping around.
If he was less successful and a wino outside a railway station, he could pretty much do the same thing, couldn't he? Singing very loudly and just lying down in strangers' laps.
Yeah, but people would let him because he has got a good voice still.
He does.
You know?
You're so positive.
They're the biggest band in the world. What's your problem?
I don't know. I just don't think I'll ever make friends with any of them.
Right, and so,
I won't now, anyway.
Exactly. What if you find yourself in a room with them? The Edge is going to come over and...
It's not going to happen.
He's going to get his bobble hat and try and throttle you with it. You know what? He wouldn't, because they're too magnanimous. They're too nice.
Really?
They've seen it all. They've done it all.
They're like politicians. They can't afford to alienate anybody.
Yeah, I mean, Bono must be aware that he has had a huge amount of vitriol directed at him at various points. In fact, I think he even writes a song on his new album about it.
No.
About the perils of, you know, putting yourself out there. So
anyway, enough U2 on the BBC. Yeah. If you haven't had enough U2 on the BBC, you can go to the red button, though. We've been asked to tell you where you can see more U2 at the BBC. But that'll be the end of it for our show.
Although we are going to play some right now from the gig last night. Which track
good,
are we playing?
Good.
It's called Red Button.
It's not called Red Button. It's called Magnificent.
This is U2. That was U2 playing on the roof of Broadcasting House yesterday.
Can I read out a text for balance?
Yeah.
Bill says, "Can you turn that portentous turgid vomit off, please?"
Well, you have
it's to... just balance, man. It's
yeah, but
balance.
where's the positive text saying
we
that
played the record.
Absolute wickle wackles?
The record was doing it in itself by being called Magnificent.
Yeah. Well, I thought that sounded great.
So did I.
For balance. A band absolutely on top of its game. Although, when they were on Jonathan Ross last night, right? Like a few weeks ago when Morrissey was on, Morrissey handed Jonathan an album by... I'm not going to be able to remember the guy's name now. A bloke that Jonathan is obsessed by, an old 70s actor guy. Did you remember that, Joe?
No.
You weren't listening, were you?
No, I tuned out. Sorry.
Absolutely wasn't listening. But anyway, so Morrissey had thought of a good present for Jonathan that was actually, perfect
right.
for him. And had some kind
Morrissey.
Of point to it. Yeah, Morrissey.
Yeah.
Do shoot. I mean,
I thought we were talking about Bono. That,
yeah, because you know, on Saturday
when I stopped listening, we
do this
about
show and it's on the radio and it actually goes out live.
Does it?
Yeah. Okay. And so,
yeah. So Morrissey's given a present to Jonathan, and it's something you can't remember.
It was a record by an actor who Jonathan is obsessed by.
Right.
And anyway, it was a good present. Now this story is going to be no good because of your lack of attention to
what was
early
the ending
part
to
of it. Could have been a great story. The ending is that you two gave Jonathan a present and Jonathan was like, oh, this is great. This is becoming a tradition, giving me a present. But it just turned out to be a copy of their album. Nothing special about it. It wasn't even signed or anything. And that's the end of the story that you didn't even listen to the beginning of.
Don't blame me.
It could have been amazing.
For your rubbish stories.
Could have been Sony award-winning genius story. And you know, because you could have chipped in and go and added something to it and provided the name of the actor that I was searching for. Instead, what do I get? Nothing. Stonewalling from Joe What's the Point Cornish. What are you even reading there?
I'm reading texts so that we can do we can do a really good final text the nation in a couple of minutes.
All right, then.
After your free play.
Okay,
so
this is a free play. Earlier on, Joe brought in a bit of vinyl. He played some Orange Juice, and here is my bit of vinyl that I lovingly transferred and listened to the scratches, popples, and crackles on Therapy Growth. Is this an obscure B-side by Thomas Dolby?
It's a good track.
It's a lovely track, though. Enjoy. Thomas Dolby there with Therapy Growth.
And genuine snap crackle and popping there, not sort of digitally added snap crackle and popping.
No, transferred that off I don't know if you can get that track on CD. Maybe you can on one of his compilations.
The Orange Juice one I played earlier, you can't get digitally.
Uh-huh.
It's quite frustrating. There's lots of Orange Juice you can't get. There's a compilation called The Glasgow School with lots of their tracks on, but loads of stuff that's on vinyl you can't get digitally.
It's bound to be a question of time for the reissues, certainly. Shall we wrap up Text the Nation?
Yes, thank you to everyone who's texted. The subject this week was the most worthless item of pop cultural memorabilia that you've got, or supposedly collectible stuff. Here is one from Andy in Brighton. When I was 6 and on holiday in America, I was lucky enough to see a live performance of Sesame Street.
Ooh, live Sesame Street.
After it had finished, and being a naughtyish little boy, I ran onto the stage and managed to find one of Big Bird's feathers.
Nice.
I showed it to my mum, who instantly took it off me so I wouldn't lose it. She then kept it from me, as she thought I couldn't be trusted with it. I would often tell my friends about it, but I could never show them as I couldn't find it. This went on for about 20 years.
What was his mum thinking?
She can't be trusted with a Big Bird feather. He'd lose it and get upset.
Yeah.
She didn't want him to be upset with himself.
Right, right. But mums. Then he doesn't get the benefit of actually having the feather.
Yes. Well,
until he's...
it's in the family.
Yeah.
Last year, I got very angry with my parents. This is 20 years later. And accused them of losing it. The argument became quite heated. And my dad stormed off and got it for me.
Wow.
We do have the feather. It's now in my hands, and I'm still a huge Sesame Street fan. He refers to it as SS.
Yeah.
Andy in Brighton.
That's not a good
well
way
done,
to refer
Andy.
To it, though, is it?
Hi, Adam and Joe. In relation to useless pop culture acquisitions, this is from Nick in Sheffield. My girlfriend's brother-in-law was in the audience at the Top of the Pop show that Nirvana played.
Wow.
Post-stage invasion, he got chatting to Dave Grohl and got his drumsticks.
Good one.
Unfortunately, he didn't get Dave to sign them, and so really they could be anyone's drumsticks.
Yeah, but that doesn't matter.
I've suggested he gets the sticks DNA tested, like a drumstick paternity test.
That would
certainly
be mad.
That's like a rock and roll version of the Jeremy Kyle show.
Yeah. Can they do that, I wonder? Just a little bit. I guess you can.
Yeah, of course you can.
Bits of... Grohl's.
If they can catch thieves via DNA, they can trace drumsticks.
I imagine there's a lot of DNA in drumsticks.
And imagine
as well.
What Grohl's done with them. They'd be covered in his DNA.
Exactly.
And finally, from Matthew in
just carry on reading.
Incredible.
The flood of images.
Says, Dear Adam and Joe, years ago in 1989, my friend invited me to a Vanilla Ice concert. Not a fan of Vanilla, but wanting to ingratiate myself at my new school, I accepted the invite. During the concert, Vanilla threw his towel into the audience, and lo and behold, I caught it. Make me an offer. That is surely the most debased piece of pop cultural memorabilia we've had today. Is that worse than the tinfoil-covered drumstick from the man in Babylon Zoo before he was in Babylon
Zoo? Much worse, because you've got Jazz Man's effort has gone into wrapping the stick there.
You think the Vanilla Ice towel.
I think that takes it.
That takes it.
Thank you very much indeed for all your texts and emails. And don't forget that you can keep those coming in if you're listening to this show on Listen Again or on the podcast. And your communications might be included in next week's Retro Textination on the podcast.
Yeah, it's a bit complicated, but not that complicated if you think about it. That's it, though, isn't it?
Yeah, we've got time for one more free play.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll see you at the same time next week. This is a track from the new Lonely Island album. Do you know Lonely Island?
Oh, yeah, they did. Well, you can't really say any of their titles.
No, Andy, they're really good. They're on Saturday Night Live, and everyone knows who they are, but they've released a lot of their songs on an album called Incredibad. This is one that's sung by Jack Black. I've cleaned it up a bit, cut a couple of swear words out. But this is pretty funny to my ears. This is called Sax Man. We'll see you next week.
Cheerio. Bye.
Bye.